dying is the last experience I'm going to get. I would love to be there for it and to pay attention and to dive into it.
Hello and welcome to You Know the Place, the podcast that explores all the local businesses, shops, clubs, and other places that you may have passed by all the time but haven't stopped into. I'm Joel Wing.
I'm Lacey Daly.
And we're your co-hosts.
Here we are. It is season 4.
Yeah.
What has been going on?
What has been going on?
I think it's always good to catch folks up on what we've been up to in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is... I was going to say one of the businesses, but really the only business that we've ever featured in our podcast that has yet to open has now opened.
Mm-hmm.
Route Zero Waste Markets.
Yeah, that's right.
Very recently, so recently that we actually have not been.
Yeah. I think we were both out of town maybe for their grand opening.
I bet you some of our listeners have been there, but.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. So if you haven't, go check it out. We intend to as well.
Yeah.
What else has transpired? Oh, I have one. Another one.
Oh, go on. Yeah.
Linda Holmes gave us a shout out.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, NPR's Linda Holmes gave us a shout out.
She's the pop culture happy hour host. Mm-hmm. I guess she was on Twitter just thinking out loud about this podcast where, I don't know, what was it, about boutique shops in New York?
It was about, it was exactly what our podcast does. She was kind of talking about walking to work and passing by these different shops that it's like, what is that?
And how does it...
How does it stay in business? Who keeps that place in business?
Right.
And then one of you wonderful people... Wonderful listeners tweeted at her and said, kind of like this. And she actually responded and said, oh my God.
My dream podcast exists in
Boise.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And also, if anybody happens to have intimate connections to Linda Holmes, I think that we try to add her on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
She might not be very active there, but we would be more than happy to have her
We would love to host her. Or, you know, if she wants to host us, we'll go to New York and we'll explore that shop that she was interested in.
We'll do
and
it.
And we'll take her with us.
There you go.
Yeah. It'll be a You Know the Place Manhattan edition.
We've both been up to a lot of traveling,
mm-hmm,
while still trying to produce this season.
Yeah, I went to Maine with my spouse.
Yes.
And you went to Hawaii with yours.
Yeah, we did a little Instagram takeover.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of you followed along, but if you didn't, those pics are still up there.
They are. They don't come down, generally speaking.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Other than that,
should we get into...
Are we stalling? Do we have an episode today?
We do. Yeah. Today...
Where are we going? And are you doing that voice on purpose?
Kind of.
Oh. I'm doing this voice. I don't even know what that is.
I don't know.
It's clearly my week to pick something out. We're going to Death Cafe.
Where is Death Cafe?
Well, Death Cafe is a rotating club. It takes place at different places.
Can I just take a stab at where they might... Well, stab seems weird when you're talking about death, but at where they might be held?
Go on.
The graveyard.
Strangely enough, yes. This one is going to be held in a cemetery.
I was hoping you were saying no, Moxie Java.
Right. Although a previous one that I saw has been... was at a synagogue. But yes, this one is in a cemetery.
Perfect. Yeah. I hope it's light out when we go. Full disclosure, I'm still... I don't consider myself a super superstitious person, mm-hmm, but I still, every now and then, will hold my breath when I drive by a cemetery.
Oh, okay.
So can I get like an oxygen tank?
No,
just kidding.
You're going to have to get over it. Maybe it's different if you're in the cemetery.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
If I pass out, somebody help me. Okay, so tell me about Death Cafe then.
Well, I went to, I figured I'd just read off, because they don't have a site, as far as I can tell, but they, for each of their events, which they hold, I think they do it once a quarter, so four times a year,
mm-hmm,
so they do it as an event. It's open to the public. So reading off of there, the Death Cafe provides an opportunity for an open conversation about death. Facilitators will guide the process. Come join the conversation, and please bring your curiosity, your interest, and your experiences.
Is it like a support group? Is it like, I know somebody who's about to die or in the process of dying,
so,
and I can't handle it?
I think that's kind of bleeding into, I think that's a good segue into my central concern.
Oh, yes. Let's reveal.
Which really is, who goes to this? Who are the people that go to this? Is it people who are having some sort of experience with it, or currently, or had recently had an experience with death? Or is it just, you know, it's like I'm picturing an episode of like Portlandia, like goths. People are just who listen to a lot of The Cure or something like that. Not that people who listen to The Cure are goths. I like The Cure.
I like The Cure too.
So that's mine, really. Who are the people who go and make the Death Cafe what it is? Because I assume for things like this, or Sunset Club, or any other kind of rotating club, that the attendees are really what make it what it is.
It has to be.
Right?
Yeah, it's the fabric of what keeps it a group that keeps meeting.
Right. Well, and then are they people who are going multiple times, or is it like they go and they get what they need out of it and they
right. don't and from go the description again. You read, I'm getting the feeling that it's not like a seance. Like
no,
we're not communicating
I don't think so.
With the dead.
Yeah, I think it's more of a conversation. They talk about facilitators. Amy Pence Brown, she is one of the facilitators. And so I reached out and asked, and so we went back and forth a little bit to see if we could get permission to go along and sit in, and so we got permission to do that, at least for one of the breakout groups, I guess.
It's tonight?
Yes. It's going to be at Dry Creek Cemetery.
Where
up off of Hill Road.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in Boise. So
spooky.
Yeah. So yeah, are you ready? I don't think you have to paint your face white or anything.
I mean, I will.
That might scare somebody.
Yeah.
Put on a sheet or something. I don't think you need to do that. Should we take a break and then go check it out?
I think so.
All right. LD, do you know what's going on with the removal of the Carter overpass between Nampa and Caldwell?
Yeah, the Idaho Transportation Department is replacing the overpass to allow additional lanes to be built on I-84.
So that's like common knowledge?
Yep.
Where are you reading this from?
I'm not reading anything. I just learned it from ITD's new podcast, Drive Idaho.
I did not know that existed.
Yeah, no kidding. Drive Idaho is a podcast devoted to providing news and information about road projects right here in the Treasure Valley.
So where do I find this podcast?
Oh, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I'm subscribing right now.
It's about time.
So just pulled up.
It is huge.
It's very big. It's a nice looking cemetery.
Yeah.
It's kind of always weird to describe these types of ones because they move, you know, a club like this because it moves around, right?
Right,
so,
yeah.
But what I will say is it looks ominous in the distance in terms of weather.
Right.
I just saw lightning.
I was thinking the same thing. I was working out and it was so hot and it was so sunny. And then I jump in the shower and I get ready to go. And I'm like, is it going to rain? Well, that's fitting. Do I need to bring an umbrella? This will be interesting.
Yeah.
I also had a thought as I was driving up. I just wonder if the cat's going to come out of the bag in terms of your newest hobby. I think we all call it a hobby. Because we're not sure what to call
it. Yeah, it might if, like, we kind of discuss our relationship with
death
and dying.
Yeah, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
There are a lot of cars pulling up right now.
There are.
I don't know what I expected, but this, look, they just keep coming in that lot behind us.
Yeah. All right, should we do it?
Yeah.
Go meet the facilitator and...
Let's do it.
All right.
Okay. We head into the cemetery and join the crowd. There's about 40 to 50 people, and the age seems to skew a tad older. But there's quite a mix, too, including some younger people, singles, and couples. Joyce kicks things off by welcoming everyone and giving a little history of Death Cafe.
Cafe. So just a couple words about the Death Cafe. Several of you said this was your first Death Cafe. You were new tonight. So let me just introduce what this is. This is an international grassroots movement that came about because many people wanted to change the culture. Our Western culture is all about denying death, fearing death, not wanting to talk about it, keep it at arm's length. I'm not going to die. This is not going to happen, or at least not for a long time, so I don't need to think about it. And what came out of this movement is that, in fact, a lot of people do want to talk about it. They want to prepare for it. They want to be more comfortable. They don't want to run away from it. So that's what this is about.
The crowd splits up into three groups, one under a huge old elm tree and the other two among the headstones and obelisks. Our group of about a dozen people agrees to be recorded for the podcast, which is normally not allowed, and is facilitated by one of three Death Cafe moderators, Amy Pence Brown. Amy is a Boise-based activist who also lends her voice to art and architectural tours and the death positivity movement.
I used to work as a mortician's assistant, picking up dead bodies at night. I wrote my master's thesis on the architecture of the American funeral home. I do a lot of things in town. I'm also a writer and an artist and a body image activist. And a lot of my work around bodies has to do with our living bodies and our bodies as they age and our bodies when they die. So it's very connected to me, all of this work.
We go around the circle introducing ourselves and sharing a bit about what brings each of us to Death Cafe. And just for time's sake, here's a snippet of some of the introductions.
Yeah, so I'm Joel. I think personally I just have an interest in death and dying issues. I do some hospice volunteer work on the side. And then I have actually, for about a month, I also did body removals. Just recently I joined someone who has a service that does that, mostly in hospice, some in-home and some in facilities.
And I'm Adie Bartran, married to Joel. I don't have quite as much hands-on experience with death like this guy has, but I hear a lot about it living with him. I think I first got interested in this when I read a few of Caitlin Doughty's books. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her, but she writes about death and just talks about how important it is to start pulling back the curtain on what the death industry is in the U.S. and how we can start having more open and honest conversations about it. And then recently I just lost my grandmother about a month ago, so death has been very top of mind, and I've had a lot of deeper conversations with my father about it.
My name is David. I've been to a few of the death cafes before. My muggle's job, if you want to call it that, my real job is I'm a paramedic. I've been a paramedic for about 40 years. And I also, for about the past 18, 19 years, have been involved in research and documentation and photographing historic and old cemeteries and graveyards.
Hi, I'm Cindy, and up until 2003, I saw cemeteries on my way down the road. I found out in 2003 my husband was diagnosed terminal, and I had a 5-year-old granddaughter who was very attached to him. So I started taking her to cemeteries. We would take flowers. She would find the oldest, dirtiest graves, somebody not paying attention to them, and go put flowers on and say a prayer for them, not telling her that my husband was dying. It made it a lot easier when he did pass for her to understand it's not a scary place.
My name's Sandra. This is my second Death Cafe. And I am a nurse. I worked oncology for 10 years, and now I work in critical care. Before I was in nursing, I volunteered with hospice. And I feel the mission of Death Cafe is extremely important. I've lost family members, so I understand the distress from being on that side. But it's also very distressing for staff in the hospital.
I'm Lacey. I am here for the podcast, and I've never been before, but I didn't know about it, to be fair. I think that, I mean, we're all touched by death in some way. And for me, I'm also a writer. I got my MFA in fiction writing. And something that I struggle with even in fiction writing is writing about, not necessarily death, but like the grieving process and the guilt that I think I personally have felt about feeling or not feeling about somebody's death. And like, what's the process of that and what's appropriate to feel.
I'm Jules. I'm also in the mental health field. I'm a therapist. I'm a clinical social worker. I'm just on a journey like everybody else. And it's a missing part of our human experience to be able to have ritual and conversation and vocabulary around what it means to be alive.
We dig into the conversation, kicked off by Amy.
One thing that came up that I think might be a good place to start, we'll see, Michael said it most specifically, but this idea of what a good death is, of wanting a good death as well as a good life and how connected they are. And so maybe, I'm just throwing this out there as a good sort of question to think about, and anyone can say what they think. What things might comprise a good death for you?
I think as a practical matter, to me, a good death would be pain-free, not having the suffering. I had a patient recently, and the diagnosis was extremely painful, and there was no way this person was going to be able to die comfortably, even on a morphine drip. There was just, everything you can do is not enough. And so to me, a good death would be without all the symptoms that go along with it.
No, it's like you talk about funerals, and funerals, people say that really it's for the grieving, you know, it's for the those who are in mourning. But I feel like dying itself is like that's the last thing that should be on their terms, on the dying's terms, as much as possible.
Sudden and unexpected.
That would be a good death.
In case you missed that, it's David saying a good death would be sudden and unexpected.
Anyone else agree with that? Sudden and unexpected? Yeah, I kind of like that idea.
I want to be present with the process as much as possible because I think there's something beautiful and phenomenal on that brink, even when we're in pain. And hopefully, you know, if I am in pain, I'll be able to handle it as much as possible without having to disengage with medicines. I've had two amazingly beautiful stories of people who have lived through a death process that is incredibly physically painful and done the work that, you know, held the space in their own hearts so well and so beautifully for their family that even in that pain, it was probably some of the most magnificent experiences that those family members and the community members could have participated in and witnessed. And their moments of death were literally like something out of a storybook with, you know, lights showing up and rainbows passing overhead and specific songs playing right on the radio at that time. Yeah, so I think that's really where, for me, the good death is, and I hope that I can hold that form for myself.
I recently did a whole bunch of advanced planning. I'm 43, my husband is 45. We have three kids that are little. Neither of us are ill or have any plans to die at any moment, but you never know, right? And I'm a big proponent of advanced directives and planning, so we recently did all of the updating of we hadn't updated our will since we had the two additional kids. We had, you know, because you don't think about, you're 40 and you're healthy, right? You don't, you're 30 and you're healthy, like you don't think about these things. And we had updated the will and we had done all these advanced directives, and it's kind of like a rabbit hole. Like you can go down and you can keep planning and planning and planning and planning. And it sort of became fun, but also terrible. And it's still so fresh. We just did this and we just sort of finished it. Like I was like, we're done. I can't add anything else. And then last night, my middle daughter loses her tooth. And so she was asking me what I do with the teeth. And I was like, I keep them in a bag in my underwear drawer. And she was like, well, what are you going to do with them? And I was like, I'm going to be buried with them. I literally just decided on the spot, and then I was like, ran to the folder and wrote it on my, you know, on my debt, like, I want to be buried. And then my daughter, that's so weird. And I was like, no, it'll fit right in with the ashes. I just keep making these arrangements now, like all the time. And then I decided I want donuts at my funeral. I had to write that down. That's like a really big thing for me. It was like, there has to be donuts. It kind of feels like planning a good death.
If we're the people who are brave enough to think carefully about it, how can we set the table? How can we utilize our own death to lend a hand toward the awakening of all of us?
When you asked that question about like what constitutes a good death, a lot of people were interpreting it to themselves, you know, like what would be my ideal or perfect way or whatever. And I like am having this moment of, I don't think I've ever thought about my own death so intentionally, but I find that I think about the death of my, like the eventual death of people close to me, like specifically my wife or my parents, and I start to wonder if I'm thinking about it to the point where I'm just being morbid, and it's because I think I want to be prepared for it. I'm curious to know, like, what is your guys' take on what's an appropriate amount of time to think about? You know, like, I'll just be driving one day, and it's like, what if we just left for work, and then she never comes home because something happens. that makes me feel morbid, but I don't want to feel morbid. I want to feel like a realist.
I don't think it's morbid at all. I think it's joyful. I think it connects to the idea of the death party, and my response to that was, this is part and parcel of how our society treats death, in that we cast it off into some abstract future that we don't really ever have to deal with. We say, we'll have that party then. We'll celebrate that person's life then. But that is now. Like, if we don't choose to see the fact that the person who walks out the door, this could be our last time on earth with them, do we really value fully, like, in that moment, the interaction that we're having with them, do we really see how amazing it is that we're alive? If we're not fully conscious that death is right here with us, right now, we can have conversations about how wonderful life is that are strengthened and reinforced by our awareness of death. And I think that we have to keep them right here together all the time in order to feel that richness fully. That was my response to that.
That made me a little teary-eyed. I don't know why. Thank you.
I was raised Lutheran, and the messages in the Bible are very much, fear not, fear not. God will come and save you. And as I'm not a Christian anymore, I really have struggled to replace that with something, because what I realize is I am afraid of dying. And to say to myself, fear not, is to deny that part of myself, to deny the part of myself that is afraid to stop existing. And I think a good death is one where I have responded to that fear the way that I want to. When I said earlier that learning to die well is the same as learning to live well, I think that's it. We all have fears all the time, and they're in us, and they're a part of us, and we don't have control over them, but we always have the choice to say, I'm gonna lean in anyway, and I'm gonna care about this anyway. And maybe not even anyway, but maybe because of that fear, like it enriches the experiences that we have.
We wrap things up and chat with Amy a bit after the cafe, posted up next to a few of the headstones, and she tells us a few more details about her recent stint of death planning.
So I call it the death packet, as a sort of term of endearment, because it was a little bit of a grueling, awful process, but also an amazing, fun, and cathartic process to go through all of this planning with my husband. And one of the surprising things that came up in these conversations that I made him have all the time was I was surprised to hear from him that he wanted to be cremated in this black suit that he got married in to me 19 years ago, that he wore at his grandfather's funeral, that he wore to his job interview at Boise State University. And only a handful of times. He's not a suit-wearing guy. It's not an outfit that I ever knew him to love.
Yeah.
He doesn't even like wearing a tie. But I was so surprised that this was such an important piece of clothing to him, that he felt that it represented these really powerful and important moments in his life, and that he wanted it to be incinerated with his body when he went. And it both made me laugh and cry at the same time, because it was so amazing.
Yeah.
And then that's when I told him that I wanted to be cremated naked, and he thought that was the complete opposite, totally bizarre at first, and then realized that was exactly right. That's probably what you want to do.
It's all about what fits you, right?
Yeah. So.
We thank Amy and the other moderators for allowing us to join, and then recap in the car.
So. Back in the car.
It is just now starting to rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little sprinkling.
That was kind of crazy how the weather changed.
Yeah.
You could see lightning off in the distance. So that was fitting in a way, kind of set the mood.
I think so.
Yeah. Well then.
Not to think about.
Yeah. All right.
Should we take a break and then head back?
That's a good idea.
Okay.
Joel, what's one thing you think our listeners have in common?
They think we're funny.
Okay. Less about us and more about the podcast here. All the places we visited are in...
Idaho.
Yes. So our listeners probably enjoy exploring and learning about Idaho?
Yeah, I'd take that bet.
So don't you think that they should check out the Idaho State Museum?
Totally. It has so many exhibits and all this information about this great state of ours.
We're talking over 500 artifacts, 46 multimedia displays, and nearly 900 photographs that all help tell the story of the people and landscapes of Idaho. Doesn't that sound like something our listeners would be into?
I think they'd really dig it.
Learn more about upcoming exhibits, museum hours, admission pricing, and special events at history.idaho.gov.
So, back in the studio, post-death cafe.
it should be a cafe. Like, there should have been espresso or something.
Yeah, right? Little teacups and saucers.
Oh, that would have been great sound.
It would have been, right? Initial impressions?
So, going in, I had hesitations.
Yeah.
And so because of those feelings and hesitations, I didn't anticipate participating.
Mm.
But I'm really glad that I did.
I'm glad that you did, too.
Also, had we known what to expect or what kind of audio we'd be getting or just situation we'd be getting ourselves into, I might have opened this episode with like a, we're going to slow things down. Because doesn't it feel like a different episode, like a different kind? I mean, it's free-flowing. There's fewer studio notes from us. It just feels like more of a thinker kind of piece. Yeah.
It is. It feels almost like you're sitting in that group.
Yeah.
It's a conversation. It's joining into. It's a listening into a conversation. Actually, my first impression really was off of something that you had talked about when you did talk. That question, is this morbid? You know, is it morbid to think about this, you personally? And then is it morbid to kind of go and participate in something like this and have this kind of conversation? Because I think if you do tell certain people that, they'd be like, why? That's morbid, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
I think that I got just as much questioning for saying I was going to this from my wife as I did when we were going to Bear Mountain. She's like, why would you go to something like that? What?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But to me, it doesn't feel that way. It feels like choosing to have this authentic conversation among people who want to talk about something that we frequently avoid talking about. That was my impression. It didn't feel like being there to be morbid, and that wasn't the takeaway that I got from anybody like that. It was kind of addressing these things head on that for some people in that mix, it's like, this really, really scares them.
And talking about people in the mix, I think that's kind of along the lines of your central concern. Which was?
Yeah, which was really, I guess, about who are the types of people, or is there an average type of person who comes to participate in a meetup like this, an event like this? And it really is a wide variety. It does seem to be people who have either an interest in death and dying issues, number one, people who work in proximity to it, healthcare, I think probably being the biggest one, or three, people who have had a recent experience with death, either with friends or family. So
this might not even make sense, but people were taking it seriously, but nobody was taking it too seriously to where you didn't feel comfortable opening up or like you were on the outside of something.
There's still laughter. Yeah. And I think part of it is because it is a serious topic. And so when people, it kind of breaks it up a little bit and people naturally look for those things.
Yeah.
Final takeaways for you?
For me, for someone who definitely feels uncomfortable talking about death or just thinking even sometimes about the topic of death, Death Cafe for me was almost cathartic. Actually, it was cathartic when I think about it. You know, like you're in this intimate group of people who, in my opinion, have done the work, the hard work of conceptualizing death, rationalizing death, evaluating death, and then putting it into words. And so to be in the presence of people who have done that has really taken off a layer of fear or anxiety for me. It was totally a cathartic experience and hopefully just the beginning of my journey talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
What about you?
One of the participants in our group who spoke directly to you, Michael, he said some things that really, really resonated with me. He talked about how part of knowing how to live is knowing how to die and being able to talk about it, not even in spite of the fear, but maybe because of it.
It was about like living a richer life because you realize that death is right around the corner, could be right around the corner.
Right. I don't know. There's something about that, that we should talk about it because it's scary. And maybe I was thinking, it's like, why does that attract me? Maybe being a writer, that's the type of kind of static that I'm like kind of drawn to. And then kind of playing in that
conflict, I guess, that internal conflict there. So that really resonated with me.
He was extremely well-spoken.
He was, and very, just a really, really thoughtful person, yeah. I felt like.
Yeah. I'm telling you, the goosebump moments are like just like this tingling sensation going on in my head of like, man, I've thought about this. If you had any sort of moment like that, maybe that's an opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to check out when the next Death Cafe mm-hmm. is, because you might actually get out of it more than you would anticipate.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
And if it's going to be in
a
graveyard,
biased,
you know, and you're the new guy, maybe bring the espresso machine or something. A big extension cord, yeah. Plug it into your car.
And maybe an umbrella, too, because yeah. Just started raining when we were leaving, so yeah, you never know.
You never know.
Right. Good? You good?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You Know the Place is a podcast brought to you by Boise State Public Radio.
And if you like the podcast, consider supporting the podcast.
Absolutely. This really is a passion project for us, and we'd like to continue making episodes.
But there are no guarantees. So if you'd like us to make another season of the podcast, consider donating $20, $10, or even $5 to keep us in business.
Go visit youknowtheplacepodcast.com and click on the support link on our homepage to make a secure donation.
And I'll tell you what, if 100 of you donate, we'll set up a time to meet in downtown Boise to share a drink and hang out.
With 100 people? Also, tell your friends about the podcast. Rate and review it wherever you listen. Just help us get the word out there, team.
Anything else?
Our sole credit. Our music is James Dean Kindle and the Eastern Oregon Playboys, who's been a supporter since the very beginning.
From across oblivion, like stone, I'll glad they sink. When I hear that siren song.
Hey, You Know the Place listeners. We wanted to take a moment to tell you about a new student-produced podcast coming from Boise State Public Radio.
It's called The Nebulous, and it really is about those nebulous topics that seem to fascinate us so much.
Things like hypnosis, animal cognition, fate.
Each episode talks to an expert in the field, but looks at the topic objectively and leaves room for listeners to make their own judgment.
So keep your eyes and ears peeled in your podcast apps for The Nebulous, dropping mid-October.